Well, trust me, I'm lying. Confessions of a Media Manipulator. That's one of the things we'll be talking about tonight with Ryan Holiday, including Conspiracy, his latest work, because there are conspiracies everywhere. And we'll talk about some of them right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Ryan Holiday is a writer, media strategist. At 19 years old, 19, he dropped out of college to apprentice under Robert Greene, who was the author of The 48 Laws of Power. Then he went on to become a director of marketing for the American Apparel Company. Ryan's creative ability and agency is called Brass Check. It's advised all kinds of clients like Google, for example, and some other prominent best-selling authors, including Tony Robbins, Tim Ferriss, who's been on the program. Here's Ryan Holiday on Coast to Coast. Now, he was back with us 8 years ago. You were on the show, Ryan. It's a long time.
Yes, thank you. It's very good to be back.
Trust me, I'm lying. You've been in the media business now for how long?
since I was 19, so over a decade now.
My gosh. My gosh. And you've seen it all now, haven't you?
I've seen too much, let's put it that way.
Well, let's talk a little bit this half about media manipulating, then we'll get into conspiracy.
Sure.
But what is the point to manipulate the media? What's the goal when companies and individuals, politicians, all do that?
Well, the media has access to the people, right? To public opinion, to the masses, and so this is incredibly attractive to someone. If you're a politician, if you're a business person, if you're someone trying to direct policy or anything, right? The public is where it's at. There's an old line that America is a company, America is a country ruled by public opinion,
That's
and
right.
therefore what has access to public opinion really rules the country. And so media is the thing that everyone is scrambling to control, to exert influence through, and not everyone is willing to play by the rules or to sort of leave this to chance. And so manipulation is a way to get that opinion over onto your side.
What has social media, Ryan, done to all of this? It's probably made it even worse and even better and easier to manipulate, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think we thought that social media was going to be this democratizing thing, this thing that made it fair, that distributed power more evenly. But in fact, it probably made us more susceptible to manipulation. In one sense, it turned us into the mob, right? Not the mafia, but
Yeah.
the crowd, the people who are prone to flights of fancy and in extreme sort of fluctuating opinions. And you see this in the 2016 election, obviously, not to make a partisan point, but what Russia has worked to do is to sort of try to put fake opinions out into the world to get other people to engage with those opinions, to propagate those opinions. And this is really no different than what companies do, and domestic politicians do every day. They want to sort of, let's say we're the herd of cows. They want to create the stampede in a certain direction, and they sort of send cows going this way or that way, and we follow.
Yeah, they want to put their own spin on things. Now, is that wrong?
Well, I suppose it depends on what direction it's sent in, right? And I think everyone attempts to say that the ends justify the means here. Oh, we're trying to get people to do this, which is good, or trying to do people to do that, which is good, or trying to prevent people to do X, Y, and Z, which might be good. I think we've got to get realistic about the fact that marketing is inherently a deceptive practice. If you think about it, right? Marketing is trying to get someone to buy something that they wouldn't have bought otherwise.
Right. Hopefully, you're trying to get them to buy something that's legitimate and it's worthwhile. But a lot of
Course.
times it's not.
Yeah, and marketers might push back on that, but if the people were going to buy it anyway, then why are you marketing, right? Why would you be lighting money on fire if this thing was going to happen without your sort of intervention. And so political advertising then is a form of manipulation. I mean, think about the marketing that we see when we watch sporting events, whether it's the national anthem, which is sponsored by the U.S. military, or recruiting commercials, which are run during sporting events. These are trying to get people to join the armed forces.
Sure.
And that's not, I personally don't think that's a bad thing, but you're essentially getting people to, this commercial is attempting to motivate you to put your life on the line for an idea or a nation, and that is a form of propaganda in the most sort of basic sense.
We have a very stringent policy here on this program that if you hear my voice on a product, I have tried it, am trying it, have
yeah.
used it in order to do that. There have been many times our sales department, Ryan, has come to me and said, hey, will you endorse this product or this product? And I'll say, no, I don't do that. I that's not me. I just have never done that before. I'm not going to. And it falls by the wayside.
And it's important to know, too, like overt advertising is probably the easiest to recognize. But what about when you're reading a news story and there's an expert quoted in there? It's important that people remember that that didn't necessarily just happen, right? That journalist didn't necessarily come up with that story idea on their own. They didn't select this expert on their own. There could have been a highly paid publicist that was lobbying and pitching the reporter to write a certain story with a certain angle that came and said, hey, look, this is the person I'd like you to talk to. And the journalist, again, wasn't going to do that, but because of this manipulation, this attempt to create influence, the public is then given a piece of information and they read it and they think about it solely as, you know, an article in the New York Times or a story on CNN or Fox News, but they don't realize really how the sausage got made and that there was that often, you know, the tail is wagging the dog, so to speak.
36 years ago, for 3 years, I was in corporate public relations, dealing with major corporations in the greater St. Louis area, Anheuser-Busch and, you know, Ralston Purina and companies like that. I'll tell you a funny Monsanto story in a second. But, you know, it was our responsibility, our jobs, to make that company look good. And, you know, we would send out video news releases of the company and things like that in the media. In many cases, would pick it up. And so we would get our story told as far as what we were trying to get across. And the media was very acceptable to that. But funny story, I mean, jump ahead. Here I am now knocking Monsanto's GMOs, genetically modified foods, and things like that. But during my public relation days, one of my campaigns was I had to promote a new life sciences center that Monsanto had come up with.
Sure.
And I got the media there from all over the planet. I mean, it was a gorgeous facility, but they were doing genetic modification then. I had no idea. And now I'm so opposed to GMOs, but, you know, I was part of introducing the planet to their life sciences laboratory, basically.
Well, it's interesting. One of the things I talk about, and trust me, I'm lying, is just how much news is exactly the scenario you just talked about, right? Like, why is it that we turn on the news and we hear about the premiere of a new movie or the 50th anniversary of this or that or the new hiring of this or that? These are these things that really are not news, but they are dressed up as news because the news has to fill so much time. I mean, it's difficult. And then companies try to take sort of ordinary things that they do and dress them up with press releases or sort of news hooks. We call them pseudo events. These are events. The opening of this laboratory you're mentioning would not be an occurrence or notable except if the media covered it, right? It's just, businesses are open or they're not open.
That's right.
But what marketers do and publicists specialize in is taking an ordinary everyday occurrence and spinning it in such a way that the media shows up and says, you know, think about a ribbon cutting. What is it? A ribbon cutting does not happen unless there are cameras there, right? It's not like the building needs to have a ribbon in front that's then cut with giant scissors.
With two people watching, right?
Yeah, these are the press conferences. These are Apple computers. Every year they have their big sort of press conference where they reveal their new products, and people eat it up, and they don't realize that this is fake, right? This is the definition of fake news in some way, not in the sort of outwardly false way, but fake in the sense that nothing is really happening except for publicity is being dressed up as hard news. And we eat it up and we don't realize that we're being sold something.
Two politicians were talking with each other. One elected, one was defeated. And the elected one said to the defeated one, "What happened to you?" And he said, "I screwed up on a slow news day." And that's so evident. The media, it depends on the day, on the moment. You know, the tragedy in Parkland, Florida, for example. Horrible story. And nothing else took precedent that day.
Sure.
You know, if for some reason somebody wanted a news conference to make a major announcement about something, that story was not going to get covered that day. And events really drive the media. China has done, Ryan, an amazing job, not for necessarily the good, to quash social networking and media. If there are stories they don't like, they shut things down instantly.
Well, that's, again, we thought social media was going to be this democratizing thing. And in some respects, it's made totalitarian regimes actually function better, because now they can monitor where people are, what they're doing and saying and thinking. And this is really scary. I mean, I would think, nobody thought, hey, that these tools were going to empower a Russia or a China or a Turkey or any of these countries. But that's more or less what's happened, and so that should give us pause here at home. And you know, that next time you feel that itch to pull up Twitter or Facebook, you might go, why am I doing this?
6 years ago, when you came out with "Trust Me, I'm Lying," you wrote about what was considered to be the dangers of fake news. How would you know that 6 years ago?
Well, it's exactly the same reason that you knew that so much of the news was fake during your marketing career.
Mm-hmm.
Marketers have, you know, marketers see how the sausage is made. And I think, you know, it's interesting. I talk to lots of people in marketing, and I talk to many, many reporters and editors and publishers. And we all complain about these things behind closed doors. You know, we all see how the news is biased, how the news exaggerates things, how it creates something from nothing very often. And then we turn around and we expect the general public to just eat it up unthinkingly. And I wanted the book to be sort of a reveal of how this works. It was really funny. You were kind enough to have me on the show. You're very open about it. But most people in the media were very, very upset. There's a lot of shooting the messenger going on with that book. And then in the subsequent years, the book has pretty steadily been vindicated by subsequent events. I mean, again, wherever political party you're on, Donald Trump got literally billions of dollars of free publicity because he so astutely understood how the media loves outrage and scandal and endlessly debating things. We've seen this with some of the Russia influence. We've seen this with companies that have been undone, companies and public figures that have been undone by quote unquote scandals where there's very little evidence. It's a scary time. We have a system that is not only rife with manipulation, but ripe for manipulation.
Well, so Sylvester Stallone went crazy last week because on social network they killed him off, he was so ticked off. His brother Frank was ticked off, and they went back to Twitter on their own to tell the world, "I'm very much alive. I feel very good. I'm healthy and everything else." But I mean, you could literally kill somebody on social network and people will believe it.
Well, it's very much, but first, the media itself very much exists in this, under this mentality of sort of publish first, verify second, right? Because there's such a great incentive to be first, right? As an editor of a big tech website said in my book Trust Me, I'm Lying, he said, you know, getting it first is cheap, and getting it right is hard, or getting it first is easy, and getting it right is expensive. And so media rushes to get the scoop, and then if they're wrong, you know, they apologize, or they pretend that they weren't, or they, you know, quietly update and fix the content. And then if they're right, well, then everyone thinks they're a genius. And I think on social media, people are looking, you know, you pull up Facebook, you're not like, okay, what's true and what's not true here? You're like, what's interesting and what's not interesting? Or Twitter, you're like, what are people saying and what are they not saying? And you see something and you go, oh, Sylvester Stallone has passed away. Boom, I'm going to share that. You know, you don't see it as your job to vet this information. But the truth is, if you're not vetting it, who is?
Exactly right. Ryan's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's his name, ryanholiday.net. And when we come back, we're going to talk about his latest work, Conspiracy. I'm going to have you read the book so you'll really find out what's going on. But we're going to talk about a number of conspiracies that have been happening all over this planet for many, many years as well. Do people like a conspiracy, Ryan?
Well, it's interesting. I think we're in a world that's awash with conspiracy theories. We love to speculate about what may or may not happen. But it's interesting how few actual conspiracies there are that we can definitively prove. And what I've tried to write about it is one of the ones that's real.
And it's a real one. It's a bizarre one too. But I don't want to give it away. But it has to do with people get the book and you find out exactly what it is. But when we come back in a moment, we'll talk all about some other conspiracies that have been happening. But back to the media for just a couple minutes as well. How do people make that distinction? The person who either watches television or listens to the radio, how do they know they're being fed something accurate and real?
Well, I think one of the things we can do is step back a little bit, right? So if you're constantly refreshing CNN, or you've got the news on all the time, or you're trolling Twitter to see what's happening right this second, you're much more susceptible to manipulation because you're seeing the things as they happen. If you step back a little bit, like for instance, if you said, okay, I'm not going to watch the news during the week, but I'm going to check in on Friday, you're going to let things develop a little bit and let the crowd kind of sort out what's true or not true. And that's the other important, you know, purpose of having a network of people that you trust, personalities such as yourself or other people you're going to follow, who do a good job of vetting this information. And so that's very, very important. Can you step back and let things sort themselves out a little bit rather than jumping on everything as it's happening and believing it wholeheartedly? So I think people are often too dependent on news, and this dependency is exploited or manipulated.
How important is the smartphone to all of this?
Well, I guess it depends. You know, if your smartphone is filled with Twitter updates and Facebook updates and Apple News updates, you know, you're being whipped around, and you're going to eventually, I think, be exhausted because it's impossible for one human being to consume all this information. On the other hand, it's your ability, you know, with Google and all these things, you can fact check. And so it's a double-edged sword.
You got that right. We're going to come back and talk about conspiracies. Ryan Holiday with us. And then our final hour, of course, we open up the phone lines. And welcome back. We'll take calls next hour with Ryan Holiday. His latest work is called Conspiracy. And it's an incredible story that I want you to read, as simple as that, without us giving it away. But, Ryan, give me your definition of conspiracy.
Conspiracies are these things that, you know, again, we often sort of whisper about, but we have very little experience because they're not only so rare, but the people who do them so often, so rarely take credit for them. To me, a conspiracy is, of course, it's something that happens in secret. It's something that's very intentional. There's a plan to accomplish something. But the legally, right, a conspiracy has to involve more than one person. Without a group of people, there is no conspiracy. And then I would say that it involves an amount of coordination between these people. And finally, I think this is the important thing. A conspiracy disrupts the status quo.
Right.
Whether it's an assassination, of course, as many conspiracies have been historically, or it's a plan to secretly change a law, or a plan to launch or create something new, or even a conspiracy to inject an idea into the public consciousness.
And with conspiracies, and they can go several ways. One, they can be so ludicrous, and the people that present it are so off base, they're laughable.
Yeah.
And then in other cases, I think there's a lot of basis behind some of these things. Like, you know, I'm a JFK buff. I do not believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. I think there was a conspiracy, and subsequent committee meetings have basically said the same thing. But we deal with so many on this show, Ryan. Chemtrails. We wrote a book on the missing MH370, what happened with that. So many different things have basis in truth and probability, don't they?
Well, yeah, and again, so many of them are conspiracy theories. We know that, or we suspect something happened, but we don't have any definitive proof one way or another, right? And so we could say the conspiracy theories are common, but old-fashioned conspiracies are rare. That's what Peter Thiel, the billionaire investor, would tell me when I was writing the book Conspiracy. And it's also interesting, it tends to be that sort of ordinary people are predisposed or open to this idea of there being conspiracies. But it's the so-called elites, it's the smart people who laugh at the idea of a conspiracy, right? We love to dismiss things as conspiracy theories. And I think part of that is a sort of a skepticism that some people might have access to certain knowledge that other people don't have. We don't like that idea. You know, we don't like the idea that things are not what they seem. And we don't like the idea that, I think it scares us, that certain people might be doing something that they're not getting permission for, right? So by definition, a conspiracy is some sort of something that happened without consent,
right?
It didn't go through the normal channels. And so I think that really alarms us. And so on the one hand, you might get people on one end who are perhaps a little quick to assume something happened. And then on the other hand, you've got other people who are incapable of admitting that some person personally changed the course of history. That's very scary.
Will these conspiracies that continue, will they ever turn into reality, in your opinion, into truth?
I mean, I think that's what's so fascinating about this story that I wrote this book about. It's that here was a person, Peter Thiel, the billionaire. He gets into conflict with this media outlet, a company called Gawker, which had sort of picked a feud with him, which had combed through his personal business, which had broadcast his sexual orientation to the world without his permission. And he said, hey, I don't think people should be able to do this. I think this is wrong. I think this was cruel. I think this was bullying. And he went to all the smart people he knew, and he said, and they said, well, there's nothing you can do about that. You know, they said, you just got to get a thicker skin. Or other people said, the way you get gossip media to leave you alone is to feed them information about your friends, or to not have secrets, right? To sort of change yourself so you're not susceptible to these things. And he said, I don't think that's the way that the world should be. I don't think that that's fair. And so he plotted, he schemed, he conspired, right, to do something about it. And in secret, he spent nearly 9 years and $10 million of his own money plotting against Gawker,
which for him was worth it.
I mean, to him, it's a fraction, it's pocket change, but it was still an incredible amount of time and objectively a lot of money. And at the end, Gawker was left bankrupt. He won a $140 million lawsuit against Gawker in a courtroom in Florida on behalf of a totally different person. What Gawker had done to him was not technically illegal, and so his team researched and searched for vulnerabilities in Gawker's history, found a place where they had committed an act that was illegal under Florida state law, financed this secret lawsuit, and by the time Gawker realized what was happening, by the time Thiel was unmasked as the conspirator,
it was too late.
It
was too late, indeed. The JFK, let's talk about that for a second.
Sure.
In terms of that is one of the biggest conspiracies that continues to this day, along with 9/11 as well.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, in Kennedy's case, you know, I happen to believe that he was killed by the mob. They wanted Bobby Kennedy to stop investigating them, deporting them, and they decided to take the president out to get Bobby to back off. And in many cases, they sadly were successful when they did that.
Well, what's interesting about that theory, and I think the reason that people are, this goes to Peter's claim, that we're reluctant to believe that someone could have that kind of strength, right? And this is going to sound controversial, but if you think about it, I think part of the reason why people would immediately dismiss that theory is the idea that the mob would be so brazen and bold as to take out the president of the United States is unbelievable to people, because they simply don't think that people would be either willing to do that or more importantly, be able to do that. And in some ways, that's a slightly depressing thought, right? Not that I think presidents should be assassinated. I think it was clearly a terrible tragedy. I think violence is not a good solution. But if you think about what the mob was, it is not that crazy to consider that they might have gone to such a length.
And they would get away with it. They could,
yes.
They could get away with it. And they set up Lee Harvey Oswald. You know, I believe when he said he was a patsy, I think he was, but that's one. The other one was, you know, 9/11 with all kinds of theories, some of them totally bizarre. Others, you know, have some credence to it. You know, we're still in Afghanistan, in Iraq, because of all of this. And that's crazy.
It is a weird thought that, you know, we can have these simultaneously contradicting ideas, right? Which is one that, like, George Bush was an idiot, and he somehow orchestrated 9/11, or that, you know, George Bush was an idiot, and he deliberately deceived us into going into Iraq and Afghanistan. And so oftentimes what's interesting about conspiracies is not that one is necessarily true or untrue, but oftentimes the logic that underpins our belief in this conspiracy and that conspiracy somewhat contradicts each other, or that one makes another more or less likely. So I don't know about these things. I tend to be skeptical, but I do think we should be open to the fact that power often will go to great lengths to protect power, and that individuals, when they are highly motivated, can do things that shock and surprise and appall us, and we do need to be on guard for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fact that there are a number of people who do not believe we went to the moon would be another conspiracy theory.
Yeah, I was reading a fascinating book the other day, and he had a joke, and he said, perhaps what's so strange about it is that we have one segment of the population that's so smart that they could put a man on the moon, and we have another segment of the population that's so dumb that they don't believe that that could ever happen, right? And he says that's the tension right there. And again, you know, he's being hyperbolic, but it's interesting to wonder, to consider the inherent pessimism of that conspiracy theory, right, that we didn't land on the moon is to say that we couldn't have landed on the moon. And then what does that say about the world that we live in?
How about the flat earthers who believe that the planet is flat? I mean, clearly, folks, the Earth is almost round. And I've seen pictures of it. My old friend Edgar Mitchell, the late Apollo 14 astronaut, saw a round Earth. The Earth is round. But why do they believe it's flat?
Well, this is what social media does. I think it puts these sort of strange, weird things in front of us. And then people who are not thinking that hard, people who perhaps don't have the critical thinking skills required to sort of push through, fall prey to a lot of provocative but ultimately misleading questions, right? When you talk to flat earthers about what they believe, it's like, why when I'm walking don't I fall off the side of the earth? And it's like, look, science has had a pretty good answer to that question for a couple hundred years, but if you can just ask that question in a vacuum and the only people answering it are people who believe the same thing as you, suddenly it starts to, the simplicity of it almost starts to mess with your head.
Exactly. Another conspiracy theory is Planet X. And I think it's very conceivable that there's another planet in the solar system somewhere that is out on this huge elliptical orbit, as the late Zachariah Sitchin, an author, would purport. I think that's entirely possible. So not everything that's considered conspiracy is outlandish, right?
Right. And some of those are just beliefs that perhaps are outside the mainstream and may one day be more in the mainstream that require either more or less evidence to decide where to go. And I think that's fundamentally different than, what I was trying to write about in this book, which is the sort of the conspiracy, the setting out to destroy someone or destroy something or to enact a secret plan, right? And those are the conspiracies that I think matter the most. Like, let's say there is a project, a Planet X or not a Planet X, that doesn't necessarily affect how you and I live our lives on a day-to-day basis. But if someone is setting out to rig an election or someone else is setting out to blackmail or destroy someone's reputation, or in the case of the Gawker and Thiel conspiracy, a billionaire was setting out to wipe a media outlet off the face of the planet, that is a very real thing that has a very real impact on the world around us. And what I think was so fascinating about Thiel's conspiracy is that Gawker had begun to suspect that there was more to the story, that something, that they knew they were being sued by one person, but that person was so persistent and he seemed to have so many resources and it seemed to go in these strange directions. But they would say later that they were embarrassed to suggest to their employees and to the public that these suspicions they had. They were so mortified as being seen as conspiracy theorists that ironically, and in this terrifying way, terrible way, their refusal to believe in the conspiracy theory is what made them vulnerable to the conspiracy.
Sure, but shouldn't they have been more appropriate and more diligent in what they reported?
Well, absolutely. I happen to personally think what Thiel did to Gawker was in some ways a heroic act. His decision to sort of stand up, I think, on behalf of privacy and the dignity of sort of individuals. I happen to believe that. But I think the larger point, I think the lesson that connects to what we're talking about here is, again, these people were supposed to be investigative reporters, and there was all this evidence in front of them that they had made this enemy and that this enemy was attempting to exact some revenge or to exert some punishment. But they were so concerned with other people's opinions of them that they didn't investigate these obvious signs because they thought they would look foolish, and that turned out to be a fatal mistake.
Yep, and it got them indeed. What is your favorite historical conspiracy story?
Well, I'm fascinated with the philosophy of Stoicism, the ancient philosophy practice.
It's Greek, right?
Greek and Roman, yes. Marcus Aurelius, Epictetus, Seneca. there is this sort of segment of the Stoics that they call the Stoic resistance. Now, it was Stoics who conspired to assassinate Julius Caesar. Seneca is one of my favorite Stoics, was executed for participating in a conspiracy against Nero. There's a number of sort of similar conspiracies. And the Stoics were, you know, big believers in truth and justice and the Roman Republic. And when they had their back against the wall, when they were threatened with tyranny, they made the ultimate sacrifice to try to restore the Roman public. Cato not only fights against Julius Caesar in the Civil War, in the Roman Civil War, but then when they lose, he commits suicide in protest of this. And it was his example, his brave fighting against Julius Caesar, that inspires George Washington and Thomas Jefferson in what's also a conspiracy. I think you could say that the founding of America was a conspiracy. We conspired to break ourselves off as colonists.
Sure.
From
it worked.
From Britain.
It
yeah.
worked. Stay with us, Ryan. We're going to come back in a moment and take phone calls about manipulating the media and conspiracies. So get ready to make the call. Ryan Holiday, our special guest on Coast to Coast, two of his books, Trust Me, I'm Lying, and the other is Conspiracy, available, of course, Amazon, bookstores, you name it. They've got it.